Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
This episode is brought to you by a mattress with a name, and that name is Douglas. More than 200,000 Canadians trust their Douglas mattress. They trust it so much they sleep on it. I have tried a Douglas mattress, and it's incredibly comfortable. It's a high-quality product at a very affordable price. Comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand and donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope.
This episode of Canada Land Shortcuts is supported by HelloFresh, the meal kit service dedicated to making cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Every week, HelloFresh creates delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take about 30 minutes for everyone from novices to seasoned home cooks who are short on time. You will get 50% off of your first box when you visit HelloFresh.ca/CanadaLand and enter the promo code CanadaLand when you subscribe. This episode is also brought to you by Squarespace. The future is coming. Make it brighter with Squarespace. Squarespace makes it easy to turn your idea into a unique website. You can customize everything, and there is nothing to install, patch, or upgrade ever. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial when you're ready to launch. You will get 10% off of your first purchase of either a website or a domain when you use the offer code CanadaLand. Here in Delamont, Ottawa-based freelance journalist, I'm reaching you today in London, Ontario. How you doing?
Not too bad. How are you, Jesse?
I'm good. We are going to talk today about the raid on the offices of Torstar and Post Media.
The dramatic raid.
The Competition Bureau is all pumped up and cocky after they got us each those $25 gift cards from Loblaws. They have now stormed Godfrey Castle. We are also going to talk about nobody's favorite McDonald, Neil. He has taken a shot at an entire religious group, and he did so on the CBC's website. Lucky for him, it's one of the religious groups that you can still kind of get away with slagging. And finally, we are going to talk about that vulgar, belligerent, blonde-haired businessman turned politician who edged out a more experienced woman in an election despite the fact that she won the popular vote. And folks, I am not talking about Doug Ford. No, wait, of course I am talking about Doug Ford. Who else would that possibly describe? Kieran, good to have you here.
Good to be here.
This episode of Shortcuts is brought to you by Justin Pitcher, Cohen Hammond, Garth Boyd, Virginie Corneau-Saint-Hilaire, Isabelle D.H., Rhonda Chant, Robert Wheaton, and Sushil Taylor.
Hi, my name is Sushil Taylor, and I'm a web developer from Brampton. I support Canada Land because the reporting that Canada Land does isn't really covered by other news media outlets in Canada. And on top of it, it's important that we pay for the media that we want and deserve.
Kieran, are you ready to hear an extended supercut of Doug Ford being an epic dickhead?
I absolutely am.
Here's Doug Ford on Ottawa Morning on the CBC.
Okay, let's get into the actual details of your platform. You claim that you can cut the waste without costing a single job. How are you going to do that?
Very simple. I did it down at the City of Toronto. I'm going to do it in Ontario. We're going to find efficiencies. We're going to drive efficiencies through lean systems, best practices, and technology.
Well, how?
Very simple. You haven't done it. I've done it. That's the difference. Next question.
Well, I'm looking for some concrete examples of how you will find those efficiencies and how much
very,
they
very,
will save.
Very, very simple. We'll get into the weeds for a little bit with you here, Robin. I know you've never done purchasing. I've done it on a multi-million dollar business on both sides of the border. It's funny, Robin. I got to ask you this question. Do you think there's not 4 cents on the dollar of savings in the bloated government of Ontario?
Well, if you're not cutting public service jobs, where are you cutting then?
No. What, I just asked you a simple question.
Well,
with all due respect,
I'm doing the interview with you.
I know, and I'm answering your question. Can you find 4 cents in the government? Matter of fact, let me answer that for you, Robin, since you aren't able to. Can I tell you something? Mm-hmm. I've knocked on tens of thousands of doors, unlike yourself.
The facts are that in 2007, the government consulted with parents, students, teachers, faculties of education, universities, and colleges. The physical education curriculum is the most consulted on curriculum in Ontario history.
Yeah, well, I'll have to disagree because I've crisscrossed this province. I haven't found one parent that was consulted.
You absolutely not. Tonsils to abortion?
No. What my point is, would you let your child have an operation without your consent? Do you have a child, Robin?
I have two.
Okay, so if they went in and they had an operation and didn't tell you, you'd be okay with your 13-year-old son or daughter having an operation, a 14-year-old, a 15-year-old? Well, in my opinion, I'm not okay with it. I was in the understanding that Rob never did drugs in front of me, Robin, and I appreciate you bringing his name up because he was one of the best civil servants there ever was. But I appreciate
main point is, I understand that you think that I am attacking you, but the main point is...
Of course, I would never think you're attacking me, Robin, neither would your listeners.
How can people trust you?
Class act.
Oh, great. Next premier.
Yeah, probably, huh? And we are absolutely defenseless. I mean, you know, I just did what the Huffington Post did, which is the same thing we did during Rob Ford. I can't resist, you know, and I think that when, you know, like he goes on Ottawa Morning and acts just reprehensibly to the host, and that I think it's totally consistent with just how he actually is, but I also think that it's a very deliberate thing that then becomes its own news story. And I'm flashback to when Rob Ford won. He refused to talk to the CBC during his campaign, and then as soon as he wins, he gives like a victory lap, like finally he gives as it happens an interview where he is just like despicably rude in a fuck you interview to As It Happens, and he's coaching football while he's doing the interview, and then he hangs up on them at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just like, it's delightful to his base, and it's kind of delightful to his detractors too. Like it's proof of what you already knew, and we now have a figure who we can't resist copiously covering anything with his name in it. So after his victory, he announces his drug plan, that he wants there to be a free market for marijuana. That gets copious. Like anything this guy does, like good luck to Kathleen Wynne, even if there wasn't the feelings against her that there are, in terms of just the ability to dominate the media narrative. That is Doug Ford's.
Yeah, I mean, he does exactly what I think, you know, Rob Ford tried to do in his later years, which is like really just turn himself. He is a brand, right? And he knows that that's, you know, in the absence and in such a short turnaround until the election with the new leadership and the six-week leadership race and the campaign and everything, you know, I think his strategy is going to be to lean very hard into branding himself and going for that populist brand rather than, like, I don't know, policy. I think he's now saying he's going to scrap the whole People's Guarantee and come up with some new 5-point plan or something. Like it's, you know, it's an absurd political tactic, but yet, you know, there's almost nothing we can do. It's going to dominate the news cycle for the next 3 months.
Yeah, I don't think he needs policy. He just needs to not be Kathleen Wynne and get the circus all ramped up again. It's disheartening to see, like, you know, it's just an ongoing conversation. I mean, it started with Rob Ford and then we saw it with Trump. We're just like, what can we do when you've got a figure like this? You know, what can the media do? Like, it's, you're watching yourself being gamed. You're watching that strategy play out. Every time something is extreme or ridiculous or mockable, You know, is it just about that we're dying for the clicks? I mean, we're not making that much money off of clicks. It's nice to see clicks. It's nice when your content, goes viral, but like, it's a bit of a hollow victory when it's going viral just because it's like Doug Ford says something crazy again.
This has been, you know, the 6 weeks that we've seen Doug Ford, into this race or whatever it's been at this point now, has been like a little click machine. I don't think there's been a ton of reporting on the campaign itself. I don't really think necessarily that there has been much to report on. It's been largely a branding exercise and a popularity race. Like, it's nobody had a platform, really. Nobody had clear policies other than Tonya Granick Allen, and which, you know, I think was the only policy that really it was that and carbon tax. I think as a result, it kind of became this domain of the punditry. Who knows what this campaign is going to look like? And I think that's the real feeling I have, is that this could be an absolute shit show.
I mean, just this is more of a political point than a media one, but the absolute chaos of what just happened, where Patrick Brown, whose platform was very, very different than what Doug Ford is talking about, being a shoo-in for the premiership, and through the sequence of crazy events, and that part is, you know, very much about the media as well, we're now going to have a premier whose politics are just like wildly different than that. And it's just like, to what extent is what's playing out have anything to do with what the voter wants? It's not really a question for me to answer. I want to make another point about some of the coverage. It was interesting to see the rebel media in trying to cover the leadership convention actually barred entry from the Conservative Party of Ontario's leadership convention, which on the one hand, it's like, wow, how far has the rebel fallen, when not only will mainstream Conservative candidates not appear on the rebel, but they won't even let them in the door to cover their convention. And you could look at it that way, but I think if you did, it's a mistake, because you would be ignoring the fact that the candidate who won is a candidate who advertised on the rebel. And the last couple of chances that voters have had the ability, or Conservatives have had the ability, to name leaders, they've named, you know, Andrew Scheer, who is the most rebel affiliated candidate in that race, I would say, given Hamish Marshall and also Scheer's appearances on the rebel. And in this case, Doug Ford. And I think that this process of re-legitimizing the rebel is well underway.
Ezra's coming back.
Okay, Kieran, I know that you've been following this this competition bureau storming into Torstar and Post Media's offices. I'm wondering, maybe you're in the better position to give us a summary of what happened, and also let me know what relationship you have to this incident.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose with the interest of disclosure right off the top, this is relating to the newspaper closures, November 27th. I was one half of Metro Ottawa's editorial team, and so we were. So I was inevitably laid off in that in the deal there. So I have a conflict on that side of things. And then the other side of things, I've also worked with Post Media and sort of will work with Post Media in the future this summer and stuff. But those disclosures aside, they were looking into, I guess, the legality of this deal, right? I think the explanation was that it came in at under less than $88 million in terms of assets, and so thus did not actually need to be cleared by the Competition Bureau. They're taking a look at it. It obviously looks like it might be, you know, it looked, I think, to a lot of people from the outside, like they were carving up the province into various different markets, which, you know, obviously has competition implications and, you know, the potential is supposed to lessen competition anyway. So I guess this would be the first shoe dropping in that investigation at all, as they some sort of dramatic raid on the Post Media and Metroland and Torstar offices. I haven't seen anything that, like, I haven't seen anybody talking necessarily about what they were after, or what information they've got, what, you know, any of this. So I think there's still a lot of questions around that from my end, but you know, it's at least a glimmer of hope that they might be taking a harder look at this deal.
And to refresh people about the deal itself, this was back in November when Torstar and Post Media swapped, what was it, 22 newspapers?
I think it was up. I think it was 22 on one side. I think it was up to about 41. I believe the number was total.
Of course.
Yeah.
And essentially, no cash in the transaction. You now own a whole bunch of our newspapers. We now own a whole bunch of yours. And it was a swap and kill. Now that we own them, we're going to kill them. And they killed them most frequently in markets where they already had a newspaper, which makes sense. Why would you want two newspapers in one market? You were couching your terms as journalists do in, you know, perhaps this was an anti-competitive measure. I think it was obviously nothing but that. It was absolutely, let's carve up our respective newspaper, monopolies, or let's make these into monopolies in various markets. Let's create monopolies in these markets. And why should we compete in markets where we're both in a death spiral? Better you take one and we take the other. Mm-hmm. So any kind of violation of antitrust laws, which, you know, I am certainly no expert on, I think would be about the technicalities as to whether or not it's above a certain level, like you say, the 88 million or whatever, not whether or not that's what they were doing. I mean, we can say that that's what they were doing, right? Mm-hmm. This was an anti-competitive. That is exactly what they were doing.
I think that the devil's going to be in the details here with anything. I think that's the way the Competition Bureau has worked in the past. Like it's hard, I think, for them to define things like anti-competitive in an age where anybody can start a website, and it's hard for them to come up with all these answers and to actually quantify it. And if, you know, I mean, it's probably right that this is going to be largely toothless and nothing's going to come of it. But
well, let's talk about that. I mean, that's interesting because it didn't look toothless. This is like crazy. Like you had these pictures of this huge, beefy Competition Bureau guy. I've never seen a more scary Competition Bureau agent, like raiding the offices, and he had a cop with him. They had a search warrant. The headline here, Feds raid Post Media, Torstar, and Metroland in Toronto to investigate, quote, alleged conspiracy. Here is the statement that the Competition Bureau put out. The Competition Bureau is investigating alleged anti-competitive conduct contrary to the conspiracy provisions of the Competition Act. Investigators with the Bureau are currently gathering evidence to determine the facts related to the alleged conspiracy. There is no conclusion of wrongdoing at this time. No charges have been laid. Should there be a violation of the Act, we will not hesitate to take appropriate action. They are sure going to lengths to look tough. Why do you suspect that this is a toothless effort?
Well, I mean, because they've hesitated to take action in the past, right? Like it's this is sort of what the Competition Bureau does. I mean, you know, the Post Media told them that it wasn't going to merge offices in the Sun Media deal. And then they ultimately did merge newsrooms. I think that the justification from the executive level of both Torstar and Post Media, I think Paul Govrick becomes the boogeyman for this a lot of time, but I think it's just as bad on the other side too. It's everyone's in the same game. Their justification that this is really what they need to do to extend their runway, I think will, inevitably be convincing to the Competition Bureau, right? Like, this is just a reality of business. This is the way things go. This is how things play out. You know, I wouldn't expect, the bigger question is, nor do I think at this point that punishing Post Media and punishing Torstar and punishing these companies at the executive level, nor do I even think that that's particularly beneficial or useful.
Yeah. I mean, your skepticism as to whether or not the Competition Bureau will do anything, I think is well-founded, and not just in the case that you cited with the Sun deal. The entire history of the Competition Bureau and of antitrust law in Canada when it comes to media is atrocious. I mean, mm-hmm. The warning signs were raised every time there were mergers and consolidation, that this would be disastrous to news coverage in Canada. And, you know, you had federal inquests into this. There's looking at the East Coast, declaring it a journalistic disaster zone. Every warning was raised, and they have never been able to prevent this consolidation. And really, you know, it's become this accepted common wisdom that, you know, newspapers just can't make money in these small communities. And of course, the challenges are real. But I think I would argue that a bigger problem for profitability in these small communities is the consolidation. Like a small independent newspaper serving a small community is in a much better position to, you know, pivot. Small organizations do that better, and they know their readership. Like we would be in much better shape right now if those papers were all independently owned. But the train's left the station. I don't even think it matters if the Competition Bureau does anything at this point or not. I kind of agree with you. Like, what's that going to do if they come down hard on these beleaguered companies?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, you know, I think the business model is and the business side of things is so precarious right now that, you know, if you tack, I think, what can they do, a $25 million fine or at very worst throw somebody in prison for 14 years, I think was, you know, what they could theoretically be facing. I don't think that that's going to do anything. First off, I don't think either of those two things is going
to
happen.
No, it'd be fun to watch. But
second off, I don't think that that would be very useful, right? Like, it's just going to be taking more money from an already precarious industry, and it's certainly not going to get, certainly not going to return my job to this, certainly not return any of the jobs of, you know, the dozens of us who lost jobs up in Ottawa. It's not going to bring any of those back. Metro Ottawa is certainly not going to start printing again. So, you know,
yeah,
while it is nice, it's a glimmer of hope. It's nice to think that somebody's taking this a little bit seriously. How this interacts, I think, also with the newspaper funding and the budget deal and all of that news, I think it's hard to say as well.
You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm too quick to, you know, to dismiss this. I mean, like, I don't know enough about antitrust law, but if there was a way to actually break up these chains, and the worst thing that happens is when they shutter these papers and the local journalists don't even have a choice in the matter. Like, is there some way that they could force these chains to offer, rather than when they're ready to close a paper, offer it to the employees of that paper, offer it back to the community in some way, turn it into a nonprofit? If you could, like, I don't know, like it feels like a fantasy because like we've never ever seen anything like that happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, the wasted value of just destroying these brands and destroying the newsrooms that are built up and all the institutional knowledge. Like the whole thing is just like it's a tremendous, sickening waste. It would be wonderful if there's some way that you could return these to their communities.
Oh, absolutely. I think there was a case in, I believe it was Moose Jaw somewhere in Saskatchewan where something like that happened. That sort of the paper banded together to actually purchase the paper. That would be, you know, I think that would be absolutely great. But And it very well may be something that is possible in smaller cases. I think in, you know, massive sort of culls of the newspaper industry like we saw in November, I don't know if that's necessarily you know, the case, but it would certainly be nice. It would certainly be a nice option. And I think that, you know, a good number of the reporters who lost jobs in Ottawa have kind of gravitated towards new community papers that have sort of jumped in to fill the gap, which is neat. It's nice to see.
This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer. And it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter-like seclusion and, you know, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get, like, anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding, like, the right balance of how much of other people do you want? I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. Okay, Kieran, I want to thank our sponsors, HelloFresh, the meal kit service dedicated to making cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, they create new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novices to seasoned home cooks short on time. Recently, I had a box of HelloFresh at home. There were these shaved beef barbecue sandwiches with these roasted parsnip fries. There was a meal of chicken tandoori. There's food that I like and I eat at when I can at restaurants, and there's a sort of like healthier version of it that we're now cooking. And it's something that would not have occurred to me when I'm just like in the supermarket trying to figure out what to throw together for dinner that night. And I don't have to go to the supermarket when we have that HelloFresh box. It makes life easier and allows you to cook real food, healthy food, fresh, locally sourced food for yourself and your family. For 50% off of your first box, visit HelloFresh.ca/CanadaLand and use the promo code CanadaLand when you subscribe. If any of this sounds good to you, you might as well just try it out and see if it's for you. Again, that's HelloFresh.ca/CanadaLand. Promo code CanadaLand for 50% off. Finally, the show is sponsored by Squarespace. If you are ready to start your new business, if you have an idea for a project, make it stand out with Squarespace. Get things started and make a website quickly. There's no reason why this should be an obstacle to you launching that project. You have beautiful templates created by world-class designers to choose from, and Squarespace makes it very easy to turn your idea into a new and unique website. You can showcase your work, blog, publish content, sell products and services of all kinds. It's a different way of thinking about a website. It's not like you just build a website and then you've got to service and maintain it all the time, because they do that for you. It's optimized for mobile out of the box. There's nothing to install, patch, or upgrade ever. And they have award-winning 24/7 customer support. Head to squarespace.com. Try it out for free. Just start playing with it. It's quite easy to do. When you are ready to launch, use the offer code CanadaLand and you will save 10% off of your first purchase of a website or domain. That is squarespace.com. Offer code CanadaLand. Kieran, this is your first time on CanadaLand Shortcuts. Are you familiar with a feature that we present to our listeners called Duly Noted?
I am vaguely familiar with it, yes.
Have you selected an item to note duly today?
Yes, it's one that I was really interested in and was sort of extremely dorky, but I think is kind of an interesting Canadian story. It's Daniel Viola at the Walrus's article about the Remai Modern in Saskatoon. If you were to guess where like the world's sort of most complete collection of lino cuts by Picasso is, would you like guess Saskatoon?
I actually guessed Saskatoon right when you were saying that. That was the first thing I thought.
Yeah.
But that, you kind of gave it away. That, so you
know. I did. Yeah. That center of the art world, Saskatoon. And I had no idea what this was happening. I had no idea that they're building this $85 million kind of, you know, very cutting edge modern art museum in the middle of Saskatoon, which, you know, why the hell would you build it there? Why the hell, if you have a large collection that you're looking to donate to a museum, would you pick, you know, at that point, uncompleted project or an unapproved project in Saskatoon? I think that bears repeating. Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, for Picasso's is just absurd to me. But so he sort of dove into this story, which is, you know, for kind of municipal policy and government sort of dorks like myself, was just like a head scratcher in terms of a project. And he did a really good, it's really fun job, really, really kind of interesting read. And I think it's just, you know, Canadian arts journalism doesn't always get the most, you know, sort of the most coverage or the most publicity, which I think is too bad, because I think there's interesting, weird and just wacky stories like this one taking place that we just sort of don't know about.
Cue the outraged mail from art lovers of Saskatoon.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and I apologize to Saskatoon.
Listen, I want to go now. I'll go see Picasso lino cuts. That sounds amazing. $85 million does sound. That sounds crazy too. I would want to see that. But
I threw a football around at the Saskatoon train station once, and I think that this might actually make me go into the town next time.
Duly noted. I would like to duly note a Canadian Press Wire story. I mean, a lot of people had this story, but I'm going to focus on the Canadian Press's coverage of this, because from the headline on down, I got issues. Headline: Alberta man charged after farm shooting met with applause outside courthouse. And so the headline tells you that that this man who's just been charged with a crime was applauded. And what proceeds is, you know, you get the story, which is that this guy caught like what seems to be a meth head rummaging through his car, and he came out and shots were fired. And it's unclear. They don't say he shot the guy in the arm, but that's the implication. And so, you know, that's what happens when you shoot someone who is merely rummaging through your car. When you shoot them, you get charged. And the article isn't really about that. The article is a provides copious coverage to the people who think you should be able to shoot people. Edward Maurice, the charged individual, his lawyer is quoted. The article just states rural crime on the prairies has been in the spotlight recently. That's all you get. You don't get any stats. Rural crime on the prairies has increased recently. Rural crime on the prairies has become violent recently. Just that it's in the spotlight, maybe because of articles like this. But most mendaciously to me, the quotes, person after person who feels like you should be able to shoot people. Here's one quote from Bill Ferguson, who lives near Vulcan, Alberta. He says, "I feel it's ridiculous that we can't protect our own home and family." Then it quotes Eric Johaniak from High River, Alberta, who was outraged after he heard that the guy was charged for shooting someone. "You have no right to defend yourself," he said. Then the organizer of this rally where they were cheering the guy on is quoted, talking about how property owners are being bullied and aren't allowed to stand up for themselves. "We need better politicians to change the damn laws," said the organizer, George Clark. It goes on and on. Then a blogger is quoted. "We understand that any of us could have found ourselves in the charged person's shoes." And what I want to say here is that the opinion that all of these people have, that you should be allowed to shoot people when they are trying to steal from you on your property, not when they are threatening you physically, but when they are trying to go through your car for some spare change, that is a radical position. It's a radical idea. And for the press, for the Canadian press, to give this much credibility to such a radical position, it's something that you would never see in any other cause that is considered radical. You would never hear, you know, people who believe, I don't know, that reparations are in order, or that, we should be returning land to Indigenous people. You would never have four or five people quoted at length presenting their argument for such a radical position. But in this case, when it's farmers protecting their land and wanting the ability to shoot people with impunity and create some sort of, stand your ground law or castle law in Canada, they have the full accepting attention of the Canadian press.
Well, there's almost like there's this folksiness too. I think that a lot of people will hear it and not quite identify that as a radical legal position. Like, there's a folksiness, I think, to like farmers who, you know, say they would want to shoot anybody who comes under their property. And you know, I think that it's maybe this article is somebody just getting absolutely seduced by that in like a sanitized way, and not actually thinking that there's people being shot here.
Yes, the press is swallowing that folksiness whole. And in fact, in the trial where self-defense was not an argument that was made, that was not the defense, self-defense, the defense lawyer was smart enough to invoke it in a dog whistle kind of way by saying, mm-hmm. "A man's home is his castle," and then goes on to this magic bullet defense. So we are invested in this idea, this folksy idea of standing your ground and protecting your property, but it is a radical position because the law calls that murder.
Duly noted.
Okay, Kieran, finally today, this Khalistani issue is continuing on. It's a story that has legs, and, you know, rightfully so, because we're speaking today on Wednesday, and the Globe and Mail has reported that they have evidence that Jagmeet Singh attended a Khalistani Sikh separatist event in the past, and it's bringing up new questions, which I think are legitimate questions for Jagmeet Singh. But something else played out earlier that I think is from keeping an eye on the media perspective is pretty extreme. I think anybody listening would agree that to single out a religious group and just call them all a nasty word is not something that you expect to read on the CBC's website, but that happened. Neil MacDonald, in writing an editorial about this rising Khalistani issue, wrote, "The Sikhs were a closed, fanatical bunch." The Sikhs were a closed, fanatical bunch. And the comedy of errors that played out after that, somebody brought this to the CBC's attention. They very quickly changed that to "Sikh extremists were a closed, fanatical bunch." But I think you can call it a cover-up because they did not include a correction notice and say that an earlier version of this article had this other language. Then it got worse because the Sikh leaders at the World Sikh Organization were raising hell about this online and saying, "CBC, would you ever say this about another religious group?" And who jumps to the CBC's defense but semi-retired CBC Terry, is his Twitter handle. Terry Malewski says, "How did that quote get through, you ask? Easy, it didn't. Your World Sikh Organization president fabricated it. He made it up. you parroted his obvious lie. The correct quote refers to Sikh extremists, but of course, you're eager to exploit the lie. What a disgrace.
Has anybody found like the Web Archive version to confirm that it did in fact, you know, say just the Sikhs at one point?
Yes. There is an original version, and in fact, Terry Malevsky apologized to the two World Sikh Organization leaders when that was pointed out to him. There's no question that that is what the Neil MacDonald piece originally said. This is intense, man, because, you know, it's very revealing how Malevsky responded. His assumption was that they forged it, you know, was that the World Sikh Organization president fabricated, those are his words, he made it up, he lied, and pretended that the CBC had maligned him. And I asked Terry Malevsky online, you know, we've been spatting and going back and forth, but like, I can't get like...
You spatting with Terry Malevsky?
Well, you know, it's becoming a joke and it's unpleasant for people to watch, but I can't get a straight answer out of the guy. I'm like, what led you to that conclusion? Like, that's a crazy place to arrive where I get that he went back to the article, saw the new language, and his mind said, okay, obviously this thing is a forgery from the World Sikh Organization. And a journalist with no evidence to back up that position publicly alleging that, you know, I don't know where the accountability is there. And I don't know where the accountability is on the part of the CBC who published that slur, that racial slur against an entire religious group. And who's responsible for that? Mm-hmm. You know, did it happen? If I wasn't saying that it happened, and if these people from the World Sikh Organization weren't, you know, taking screen grabs and putting it out there, it's like it never happened. Like, what is going on with this? And the larger thing here is that there is this attempt from a lot of journalists, you know, Terry Malevsky, because he covered the Air India bombing and feels very possessive about this story. And Terry Glavin and now Andrew Coyne, they're saying like, see, mm-hmm. Jagmeet Singh does have Khalistani stuff to answer for. This was legitimate. This is not about racism against Jagmeet Singh. And I absolutely agree that these questions are legitimate. But those of us who detected something foul in the way that this is being singled out. And I'll remind people that, you know, you talk about any independence movement or separatist movement, be it the FLQ or the IRA or Zionism and its origins, that all of these movements have violence in some. I'm not trying to excuse anything, but those of us who feel like there may be some bias on the part of Neil MacDonald or Terry Malevsky, we're not making that up, mm-hmm. you know, like that's part of this as well.
Yeah, this is one, for whatever reason, this issue just like attracts all the, like, it's the usual suspects. Like, it's, you know, it's the Andrew Coynes, it's the John Kays, the Terry Glavins, the Terry Malevskys, all of these guys. They just have this obsession with Khalistani extremism, which, you know, geopolitically is a very... You know, it's a very far removed issue for us, and one that we should probably maybe not be poking our heads into. Like, why get into the mud about Khalistani separatism?
You know what? I actually don't agree. Like, I feel like, you know, and actually this is something that it's not a left or right thing, because Stephen Harper went to these events, you know, Patrick Brown, you know, like there is this large Sikh diaspora in Canada and, you know, actually... You know, there are connections, and it's impacting our relationship with India at this point. So I think it's absolutely a fair game as a newsworthy topic.
Well, it is, but it absolutely is. But I mean, you know, I think you have to treat it with any kind of historical consciousness, right? Like the Sikh separatism is not something that came out of nowhere. It's not an angry terrorist movement. It's, you know, it's a response to a relationship with the Indian government that, you know, for a long time didn't necessarily treat them equitably and all sorts of things, right? Like, it's, you have to kind of subject it to the historical context as you would put any separatist movement. But I don't think we're doing any of that. I think it's like Khalistani extremists become, you know, removed from their context and are just, again, sort of a nebulous, you know, terrorist organization with quotes around it, you know, in a vacuum, which is weird to me.
Yeah, I think that that's true. I think that there is an attempt to basically, like, we don't want to hear this nuance, anything having to do with any kind of Sikh independence. Now let's put that outside of the window of acceptability and let's equate that with terrorism. Mm-hmm. And I think that, yeah, if we are going to cover it, and we should, sensitivity, you know, to this community is like the first thing that should be kept in mind. So when you're documenting the fact that Canadian politicians of every stripe have been, you know, present at some events where, you know, photos of, you know, people, martyrs and arguably terrorists have been present, and we should be documenting those things, maybe don't title that report Samosa Politics,
yeah,
which is, of course, what Terry Malevsky, yeah, called his piece on that some time ago.
For whatever reason, this, you know, this he's reported on, it's very odd. I mean, he's reported on it for so long and really owned the story, but it's become such a massive blind spot, I think, for him, and in the way he talks about it, right? Like, Somoza politics is, I mean, that's bad in 2006. That's even, you know, there would be absolutely no way anyone would title something that today. They shouldn't have done it then.
It wasn't that long ago. They shouldn't have done it then.
Well, yeah, 12 years. Yeah, it's right. But I think the larger point there is that for him, he has kind of drifted into the more and more extremes, and it's just, it has become a blind spot where I don't think he knows it's a blind spot anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I think he just thinks that he owns this story in a way that nobody else does. And, you know, he is the sort of final Canadian arbiter of who is a Sikh terrorist and who is not a Sikh terrorist. You know, he falls back very much into that same rhetoric that you see all the time, which is that there's, you know, there's the good moderates and then there's the fundamentalists and then that there's nobody in between. And so when he starts from this position, right, he starts from this idea that there are Sikh terrorists, but then there are all the other good Sikh people. He's starting from this binary that is strange and I don't think accurately reflects, you know, the realities of again, Khalistani politics.
Kieran, that is your Canada Land Shortcuts. If anyone wants to email me about it, they can do so by sending something to jesse@canadalandshow.com.
You can send me the Saskatoon hate mail.
Yeah, where can people direct their hate mail about the Saskatoon thing?
They can send it to me on Twitter because I will compulsively argue back for some reason.
And what's your Twitter handle?
K_Delamont, DELAMONT.
Thank you for that. Tweet nice stuff to us at Canadaland, you know, or other stuff. That's fine, too. We are online at CanadaLandShow.com. We have a Facebook page as well, and our crowdfunding site is patreon.com/CanadaLand. This episode was produced by David Crosby. Welcome to the team, David. A new episode of DDX, the podcast about how doctors think, just went online. A woman with sickle cell disease is well known to ER doctors as a frequent flyer. Every time she shows up at the hospital, it is due to disease-related pain. Except for the one time it wasn't. How did they figure that out? Go to figureone.com/DDX to find out. It is now the number one medical podcast in the US and Canada. Syndication of this program is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. And if you like what we do, please support us on Patreon. This episode is brought to you by Douglas. If you know of a better Canadian mattress at a better price point, well, you're just a liar and you're lying to me right now. No, Douglas is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. I know this mattress. I trust this mattress. Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand. To claim this offer, that's douglas.ca/CanadaLand.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial. Plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.